Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
The rhetoric of this election is all about communities on the brink, Americans in decline, and the anger out in the heartland that is finding voice in new candidates, insurgent voices, sounding the alarm. But the numbers show that while there is plenty to be concerned about in the U.S. economy, there are also thriving communities all over America. They are not what Atlantic National correspondent and pilot James Fallows and his wife Deborah Fallows, a linguist and author, set out to find when they decided to take a three-year, 54,000-mile journey in an airplane across America.
When you get off the East Coast or off, like, L.A., San Francisco, it's just a big open country full of a lot of places you can go. In a way that's different from, but maybe more dramatic than a road trip, you can see the terrain change.
What James and Deborah Fallows found were cities prospering on their own terms, people steering clear of national politics, and as they traveled, they noticed a pattern of characteristics that healthy, happy, prosperous communities seem to all have in common.
Before we started, Jim and I thought, we really don't want to talk politics. We don't want to talk national politics, at least as any kind of opener or deep into the conversations in these towns. And so we never brought it up. Do you want to guess how many times national politics came up in the conversations when we were talking about people's towns? Pretty close to zero.
Yeah, I bet it would probably be zero.
And we've been at this for 3 years now, so this was, you know, quite a long time before any of the campaigns started. By contrast, what people were really interested in talking about was their town and the problems they were looking at and how they were solving them. And it was clear to us from the get-go that these were towns where people were working together and that the political sense of things was one element that you would kind of push to the side in your drive to solve problems.
What are you talking about when you say local patriots? That number two, you can pick out the local patriots. That's an important feature.
What we mean is we go into some town and we just start by asking a newspaper editor or a high school principal or whatever, who makes this town go? And if there were names that immediately came to mind of people who were philanthropists or high school teachers or developers who'd taken a big stake in making the downtown function or whatever, it was a sign that people knew not that there were bosses in the town, although sometimes, of course, there was a sense of people lording it over others, but there were people who felt responsible for the welfare of that place.
Now, number four on this is people know the civic story. How does this do more than just gauge who's someone that got there, you know, a year ago and who's someone who goes back four or five, you know, generations?
I'll use the analogy of the national story of America. We all know the whole founding myth of immigrants and the frontier and the Civil War and everything that is supposedly the story of Americanism. We know it even if we think that it's misleading in various ways. And there are certain cities where they have a similar sense of themselves so that even somebody who's just arrived recently thinks, okay, here is the connection between what people did 50 years ago and what I'm doing now.
There's also an interesting case of, I think, a changing story, which is in Fresno, California, which is a pretty rough town that is now getting a whole lot better. There are a lot of young people moving there for a new reason, which is that they see it as a place that has just as much potential but is much more affordable than, say, Silicon Valley. So there are a lot of incubators starting there, and there's an incredibly active arts scene in the downtown. It's almost a kind of frontier mentality that they will make this town in that image.
Now, I'm going to clump three of these together here, and one of them seems completely obvious, and the others seem very curious. Five, six, and seven, they have a downtown. That seems sort of completely obvious, but they are near a research university. That's an odd one. And they have and care about a community college. That one on the surface seems sort of obvious, but then when you think about it, why, if they have a research university, do we care about a community college?
So I'll give you the quick 1, 2, 3 on those, or 5, 6, 7, as it were. So the downtown, the point is that between, say, after the Civil War through about the 1920s or 1930s, America built a tremendous amount of what we think of as classic Main Street downtown. And some of it was bulldozed under in the 50s and 60s, but a lot of it is still there. And so the towns that seem to be working best are places that are restoring this. And that is really a big thing around the country of finding young people moving downtown to live, restaurants, et cetera. So Greenville, South Carolina is actually a sort of case study of how that can matter. Research universities, those are tremendous advantages. I describe them as sort of being the equivalent of a natural port, where you have students coming from around the country, you have professors coming from around the world, and you have the real phenomenon of startup industries being spun off from it. The community college, I've actually become thinking community colleges are the big thing in American education, because that's where the actual growing category of well-paid blue-collar jobs, as like robotics technicians and welders and all those things, are matched with people who have now low-paying service sector jobs in Mississippi and Georgia and Oregon and other places, matching people who are being squeezed out of old factory jobs to these new opportunities by community colleges.
Now, number 11 here, they have craft breweries. I mean, I have a little trouble imagining that this is a real economic indicator. It seems more like, you know, something that one of you just loves that craft breweries happen to be there. But how do you relate that to the health of individual cities?
Okay, we can guess who's taking this one.
Yes. This is something that one of us has a particular fondness for. And indeed, the ideal town, from my point of view, has a craft brewery at a small airport. But the reason it's more than a joke is there's a craft breweries and now craft distilleries are even more than locavore food and coffee shops and all that. They are proxy for a certain kind of cultural change. And I don't mean hipsters moving into Mississippi. I mean people who are entrepreneurs. There's a certain kind of startup mentality they have. These are businesses. They become actually significant businesses in a lot of places. So as I say, it sounds crazy, but see if you can find an exception as you travel around of a city that's on the way up that doesn't have a craft brewery or now a craft distillery.
We were having a little tussle over that, because my number 11 would have been a Riverwalk. In every town that we went to, you could find a Riverwalk, even if they didn't have a river. And to me, it was the sign of that they wanted to make their town a nicer place to live, a place where the public could go out and enjoy themselves. And so Riverwalks and brew pubs kind of go into the same category. But they you know, they're part of the same thing, improving the texture of the town.
Thank you so much for talking with us. And good flying to you, James and Deborah.
Thanks very much, John. It's great to talk to you.
James Fallows is a national correspondent for The Atlantic and author of the book China Airborne, The Test of China's Future. His wife, Deborah Fallows, is a writer, linguist, and author of the book Dreaming in Chinese, Mandarin Lessons in Life, Love, and Language. You can find their journey chronicled in an article titled Can America Put Itself Back Together in the March issue of The Atlantic.